Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and today we're joined by a man who has truly had a historic 12 months. He's a left-handed powerhouse, a clinical wicketkeeper, and a cornerstone of South African side that recently claimed the ICC World Test Championship. But if you really wanted to know what he's capable of, just look at the score at Newlands from January 2025, where he hammered a massive 259 against Pakistan. Ryan Riggleton is a name that bowlers around the world are learning to fear. From the domestic circuits to the lights of the IPL with Mumbai Indians, today we're going behind the stats to talk about the mental grit it takes to play an innings that long, what it's like to reach the pinnacle of Test cricket, and how he keeps his cool when the pressure is on. Game on. Hey Ryan, welcome to Game On with Grace. So stoked to have you on. First of all, before we get into it, how are you and where are you in the world right now?
Hey Grace, thanks for having me. Yeah, nice to be back. I've always wanted to get on your podcast or your channel. But yeah, nice to be back home in South Africa. I've got a couple of weeks off after the IPL before the next one. So yeah, time could slow down for now.
Oh, how good. I bet it's the best feeling to get back home. It always is for me, especially when you get that little bit of gap in your schedule, which I'm sure you don't get much of these days. You're a busy, busy man, very much in demand. But what do you like to do when you're at home for just a little bit of a stint?
Yeah, I think like, you know, coming home is always very much welcomed, especially when you've been in the subcontinent for so long. But I come home for such short periods. I never try to plan too much. So catch up with a couple of mates. I see a lot of the family. Just coming from India, you don't get a lot of time to be outside. So get outside, play some golf. Just enjoy the fresh air, I think, for once. Explore a bit of home, I guess. It's sometimes so foreign to me in a way. Always coming home, it's always a treat.
Tell me though, IPL 26 is almost done and dusted. This is the 19th season of the IPL. You've been on board with the Mumbai Indians now for a couple of years. Tell me how the experience has been so far, not the year that you would have hoped this year, unfortunately, finishing second from the bottom. But just tell me overall how you love being involved. Sorry to jab the knife in there with that one. But tell me what it's like.
It's really incredible. You always, growing up, always watch the franchise as being probably the leader within the T20 industry. It's obviously taken a bit of a turn at the moment and probably needs a bit of rebranding internally and a new pathway and how things are going to be done. But the system is still the system and it runs beautifully. To have, you know, legends on the field as well, Neil Roach, Suryas, Tilaks, Skies and Bumrahs. And then obviously the legends off the field with Mahela, Polly, Malinga as well. So they really make your life as easy as possible. But with that ease comes a lot of pressure to perform, obviously. So last year we were close to up to scratch. This year, as you said, second from the bottom, a little bit disappointing, a bit dismal. So the pressure does weigh on the players to obviously perform, but that's professional sport and that's life, I guess. So you learn to deal with it, but opportunity to play in Mumbai at a very full Wankhede Stadium, I know you've experienced it as well, is something really unique and really special. So to open the batting with Rohit and to play for one of the leading franchises, you know, in the game is something really cool and something I really enjoy.
You mentioned opening the batting with Rohit Sharma. I mean, what an icon of cricket he has been and continues to be. But to walk out with him and play alongside him, surreal?
Yeah, extremely. I think more last year than this year. The crowd just want to see him, so they actually don't really care who's on the other side. It just happened to be me. But, yeah. You know, the crowd goes nuts for Rohit. He's obviously one of India's greatest players. So it's really cool to see how, you know, the amount of support, the volume of it is frightening. And unless you see it firsthand, it is incredibly eye-opening. But as a partnership, like I said, he's a phenomenal player, and we seem to dovetail quite nicely. And hopefully we can have another year next year of both of us being fully fit and getting the full 14 games out of us. And like I said, if we can do that, I know our partnership will, you know, really be quite prominent in the IPL. And yeah, hopefully we can continue that.
Tell me though, with Lowett, what's he really like to bat alongside of? I mean, do you guys talk a lot? Is he kind of a little bit more quiet, reserved? What's the dynamic really like? I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to.
No, he gives me nothing. He gives me absolutely nothing. He's quite a quiet guy. He's happy to speak and stuff, but you got to seek that from him. He won't come to you and, you know, impart his knowledge or his wisdom on you. But he gives me donuts. We walk outside, it's a play straight, good luck, tells you what the bowler's going to do. And, you know, he plays one of his trademark shots. So I hit a boundary, come glove tap, no words exchanged. Kind of just keep hanging in. The only time we get there is when he gets a little bit tired on about 70, and then he's like, all right, I'm teeing off now. Like, I'm done for the day. And that's probably the most information he gives me. But he's quite, like I say, he's quite quiet. Unless you seek information from him, he won't really give you too much. But when you do, he's really happy to tell you and let you in a little bit more.
That's so funny. Gives you donuts. Oh, well.
Absolutely nothing.
He's in. He can do what he wants, play by his own rules. How do you deal with the pressure in India? I mean, as you said, they live and breathe cricket. And to walk out on Wankhede Stadium, it is one of the loudest stadiums during the IPL. You just feel really close to the crowd. And I can't imagine what it's like when everyone's cheering for you. But being on the boundary, you really feel that noise. It almost rattles you. But tell me, how do you deal with that kind of environment? Do you get anxious? How do you cope?
Yeah, you definitely get anxious. I think especially when you've had one or two bad performances, then you lose a little bit of sleep. But like I said, it's not the first time we're in that situation within our careers. You're right, it is the loudest stadium, and it's kind of built up where the crowd does feel on you, and they're just really passionate about the support. I really think the one nice thing as another player in the Mumbai end is that because you have those big dogs, that the crowd really gets up for the big dogs and wants to see them play. So it takes a little bit of heat off you, and you can kind of just go about your business. There's enough support structures, enough guys as overseas players and overseas coaches that are in the same boat. We're all kind of rooting for each other. We all put a lot of energy into each other. And I guess at the end of the day, you prepare as best as you can. And those guys take the majority of the pressure. But I think it's more internal where you got to try battle with it. And that's the problem I sometimes think with India, is that you have 4 or 5 days, you don't leave your room, and or you turn on the TV, it's cricket. You walk outside, it's cricket. You do anything, it's about cricket. And that can get quite consuming. So the challenge is always just to try step away from that space. Prepare really well. And like I said, try have fun with it and not put too much pressure on yourself. But sometimes it's a little bit harder, especially when you're having a tough season as a team and the owners are breathing down your neck and you've got high quality players on the bench as well. So it's all those things to factor in. But if you can just trust your skill and trust how you've worked it out, at least you can put your head on the pillow knowing that you've done what you can regardless of how the result goes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere because we're going to get to know Ryan a little bit more with Human Behind the Heart. Right, well, enough IPL chat for now. I'll let that one breathe. But we're going to move to a segment called Human Behind the Heart. We get to know you a little bit better, you know, away from all your stats and accolades, just you, the person. So starting off, I want to ask, what was little Ryan like? Were you a sports freak? Did you just try everything? Surely you play a little bit of footy. I mean, you're built for it.
You think so? Yeah, I was really fortunate enough. We have large schools and large campuses here in Johannesburg. My dad was a teacher, so I lived on campus. So yeah, we play a lot of footy through the winter. We play a lot of all sports, in all honesty. So I was a busy kid. I was always outside. Still am more busy and still am always outside. But we were fortunate enough where I lived on a place that had 5 swimming pools, 11 cricket fields, 5 rugby fields, you know, you name it, they got it. And growing up with my brother, my mates, we had always opportunity to go play some sports. So I'd drag my dad down to the nets at 6 a.m. He'd feed me balls in the machine, and that would be flat out cricket season. Play squash in the evening, and then as the summer would move on, we'd be straight into rugby. Wasn't the best tackler, but you know, made my presence felt on the field in different ways. But yeah, I was a really busy kid. I really just got out and tried everything, and then as I got a little bit into it, worked out which one I preferred and which ones I was a little bit better at. And once I kind of got there, then I started to channel a little bit more towards cricket. And unfortunately, footy took a bit of a seat on the back burner there.
Yeah, why weren't you a good tackler? Were you a gentle giant?
I'm not a giant by any stretch, but young Ryan was quite small, and you get these big Afrikaners who are honestly four times the size of me. To put it politely, I was just scared as hell. They were going to hurt me, and so I got my big mates to stand in front of me, and then, you know, I was good with the ball in hand, maybe not the best with the ball out of hand.
Fair enough. Oh, well, give that result to someone else. But you found your feet in the cricket world. When did you really work out, okay, I'm kind of good at cricket here, this could be something I could, you know, make into a living?
As you grow up in Joburg, you have all the provincial levels. So you got under 13, 15 and 19. And I think when I was 15 or 16, I made the under 19 side. And KG was in that team. We had a lot of good players that played domestic cricket as well throughout South Africa. So it's probably my first snip at say, okay, well, I'm here with, you know, the big boys. You always knew KG was destined for success. So if I'm kind of around him, it can't mean I'm too bad. But the following year, we played in the same tournament, all the interprovincial stuff, and I ended up walking away as player of the tournament. So probably from there, I had a bit of a clue that, all right, I have something here. Didn't guarantee anything, but I kind of knew that I had a chance. And as I got older, as I, you know, kept working through it, I traveled first year out of school to New Zealand, actually, to try for New Zealand. And eventually, and eventually to the UK as well. So before coming back and settling in at varsity. But yeah, probably when I got to that under 19 stage, when I was competing with guys like KG and, you know, in and around, you know, some really good players at the time, I had a good sniff that this could be an option for me. Especially with the way those tournaments went from a personal point of view.
Now, growing up, who did you idolize in the cricket world? Was there someone or multiple people that you really looked up to?
You're actually going to think I'm saying this because it's you, but I really admired your dad.
Okay. I mean, you both are listeners, so it kind of makes sense.
I was obsessed with Australian cricket growing up. I used to wake up, watch the Ashes, and I just love the intensity and the pace and everything. So I loved watching your dad bat. Mike Hussey was really, really exceptional. I used to follow. I really enjoyed, obviously, Ricky, and towards the back end, I really enjoyed Shane Watson, just full Australian, clearly. But
wow, you love the Aussies.
Yeah, I know. I was obsessed. I always wanted to play in the Ashes for Australia, never for England. But growing up, it was the number one thing that my dad and I used to put on the TV. We'd wake up every morning, days 1 to 5, 4 or 5 tests, and watch. So yeah, I kind of got a good hold on Aussie cricket. But if I had to think of, yeah, a couple. All the left-handers, really. Your dad, Adam Gilchrist, Mike Hussey, top three, definitely.
The Aussies had the chokehold on you. That's so funny. I love it. But I mean, yeah, it does make sense. It does make sense, being a left-handed being batter. I mean, it's a big responsibility, opening at the top. How do you do it?
I don't know. So I chat to your dad sometimes to give me some inspo.
What kind of advice does he give you? I'm interested. What does he say?
Yeah, he reminds me of just simple things. He tells me not to overcomplicate it. I can overcomplicate a lot of things in my life. So your dad kind of just keeps it simple. I think if watching him and, you know, not knowing too much about it, but the way he played the game was quite dominant and in your face and really, really simple stuff, just looking at his technique and everything. So yeah, he reminds me just not to complicate it and try have a lot more presence at the crease. I mean, it helps for him when you're 6 foot plenty. Ryan is a little bit smaller. I have to earn my presence at the crease. So yeah, he just kind of keeps it simple. He offers me advice, especially with regards to test cricket, how to structure innings and how to, you know, move through the phases and the gears. But in saying that, he's kind of, well, we haven't chatted a lot recently. So I might pick up the phone and give him a ring and like, hey, Loss, I need some extra help from you, please. But no, he's been great. He actually reached out to me and offered me a hand a few years ago. So to have someone like that, you know, growing up, one of my idols, it was a really cool experience. And yeah, it's something that I'll definitely keep pestering him for going forward, especially now that we got you boys coming over to us in September.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I get the old "don't overcomplicate it" as well. So I've got someone else in the same box as me. But no, sorry, I interrupted you with my question before. But what is it really like to open the batting? Do you deal with like obviously big pressure for someone to do that? But then also you've got the whole wicketkeeper aspect as well. So you've really thrown yourself in the deep end in terms of what you do for the great game.
Yeah, I won't lie, it's a bit nervy, especially in a test match, I think. You know, to front up is probably the hardest place to bat in test cricket. To front up against it is quite nervy. But I don't know, a trick that I've maybe done is just lower a few expectations sometimes. You know that when the conditions are lopsided towards the bowlers that, you know, you can lower expectation and just really simplify it and almost dumb it down in a way that, you know, can almost lie to yourself. I'm not expected to do too well here, and it kind of just keeps you calm and pulls you a little bit more towards yourself, and allows you just to react and play freely. I think I'm very guilty of overcomplicating the game sometimes, so that helps me in that way. But I think, like I say, through preparation and through putting performances on, you get a lot of confidence for it. I get excited when I walk out to bat in India in T20 cricket because that's, you know, it's fun. It's part of the game. It's a really exciting opportunity. But I definitely do get nervous in the longer formats. Terribly scared of getting out first ball of the game. So that's why I always send Aiden and Rohit to do it. Yeah, that's not for me. So those guys can front up and do that. But yeah, it's just another mental battle, I suppose, of just trying to stay calm. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is just trying to stay calm. It's very easy to overplay the game in your head and take yourself, you know, into a situation that hasn't happened yet. And the important thing, I think, is just to stay realistic, stay calm. And if you can keep that kind of level quite simple inside of you, then it just gives you the best opportunity to think and react clearly.
Do you have a preference between T20 or test cricket? I know that's a tough question, but if you were to pick one.
I think it's test cricket. Test cricket's still the ultimate and something that I want to play forever and a day. It obviously is the most challenging format. It's internationally, it's probably the one where you will get recognized as a player. And it still is the one that a lot of us, not just myself, within South Africa are desperate to play and really, really up for. So. Yeah, T20 is fun, and obviously in today's landscape, it changes the way you think about the game, and there's obviously financial benefits towards it, a lot of travel aspects as well, and, you know, it can pull you in a very different way in your career. But I think we were chatting about it, myself and Quinny, to try balance the two now can be a little bit tricky, and being a bit more of a, I want to say, an older school generation, but, you know, growing up and playing alongside guys that are heavily entrenched in those ways, it does remind you about the importance of test cricket and the value it brings to not just that game, but also to T20 cricket. So, yeah, we're not those new generation players looking, you know, for one format only. I want to play all of them as long as possible. But test cricket is still the ultimate. It's really tough to pick. But if you had to give me a series win at home against Australia, I'd take that over a couple of good T20 scores.
Yeah, fair enough. I can understand that. Yeah. you mentioned travel, and cricket certainly allows us to do a lot of that. How do you navigate traveling and being on the road all the time. It definitely comes with its own set of challenges. It's so much fun and it's amazing to see a whole new place for me, I think. But it is also tough to be so far away from home for such long periods of time, which I'm sure you deal with constantly. But how do you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, you got to have thick skin. I think a lot of what we do is seen as glitz and glamour and, you know, everything's amazing. And a large portion of it is really amazing. But it's all the stuff behind the scenes that people maybe don't get. It can be really tricky being on tour for so long. And I think the importance is to try to find some kind of routine in whatever you're doing, some kind of structure within your life. I think that definitely helps me. It really does help when you go to nice places. We're off to America next in a couple of weeks, off to the UK after that. So it's very easy to, you know, live a life out there that you would at home. And you get the opportunity with a lot of mates from overseas and a couple guys from South Africa to do that. So you find familiarity in the simple things, I think, and the things that you choose to. And like I said, for me, that would be in India and tougher places. It would be your friends, both overseas and local. Like I say, we're all in the same boat together. And if you can, you know, find some kind of connection of those guys outside of the game and find a good routine of what and do the things that you enjoy, it definitely does make it a lot more bearable and a lot easier. But to do that for a period of time always does eventually weigh on you.
For sure. All right, let's lighten things up. Tell me your favorite on tour story.
I can't tell you all of them. They're extremely inappropriate.
No, I know that. I'm allowing you to be selective here. Come on, take the bait. You don't have to expose yourself for anyone else. But give us your favorite on tour.
A little bit tricky, that. I'm trying to think of recent ones. We have Trent Bolt in our team that tells an amazing story, like an amazing, amazing story. And he really does get the best out of the guys. And like I said, he tells some highly inappropriate ones, which are, you know, for guys on tour, it's great. It's really great stuff. It's just, I don't know. There's always like small things that happen throughout the tour. We have guys that find themselves in some real unfortunate situations and positions, and that's generally by their own hand. One usual customer to that is Quinny. He generally finds himself, Grace, I don't know, I can tell you, these things are extremely inappropriate from the stuff that we share with each other.
Wow.
They just get a little bit tricky sometimes. Probably the bad ones are the ones that I really listen to, because they do, like I said, they do make me laugh. But I think, you know, for me, we have a lot of small moments throughout the day, throughout the games. We have a great bunch of guys in various teams, a lot of tricksters and a lot of, you know, guys that think they're funny in different ways. But I think we've all got a great sense of humor. We all are kind of up for a bit of adventure and a bit of stories. And if it does turn sour, then we know that, you know, someone's gonna bear the brunt of it. But we're always looking to, just enjoy each other's company, put each other in an uncomfortable position for our own amusement sometimes. But to answer your question, the ones I'm thinking of right now is definitely the ones I wouldn't like to say on your podcast.
Sorry. You're very PR safe right now. The management will be very happy with you. You're very PR safe right now with that answer.
I'm extremely PR safe right now. I've been drilled this how to deal with these kind of questions.
Damn it! I thought I was going to get something out of you. Anyway, I'll let you have.
Sorry about answer. That.
It's all right. It's all right. Don't be sorry. Don't go anywhere. We're taking a short break. But when we're back, we're talking cricket, pressure, and all the moments that shape Ryan. Now, we've got to ask you, though, you were part of that squad that won, the squad of the 2025 ICC World Test Championship. Tell me what that was like to be part of. Such an amazing moment that you guys achieved, but tell me what it was like to be in the dressing room.
Yeah, it was incredible. It actually was incredible. I mean, I've got that signed up behind me there from the big day. But yeah, it was a game. I think that was amazing. You know, everyone kind of didn't give us a chance. And yeah, no one really gave us a chance. And the way that the guys, you know, dug deep and had the character to front up against a really good Australian side was something that, you know, the belief grew as we witnessed in front of us. We had a lot of support. Gosh, it was full of South Africans. It really was. It was amazing. Every time we walked out in the street of London, there were people, you know, they knew what was going on. They knew who you were. They knew, you know, everything about the game. And to see that magnitude of support that we had was really cool. But once the game was over, yeah, we locked into the change. We had plenty of beers. You know, it was kind of just a surreal moment, I suppose. We all had family and friends up there. We stayed in our whites forever and a day. Yeah, we had lots of signatures and just a really cool moment to eventually walk up back onto the field. The Aussie boys were there having beers with their family and their friends on the field as well. And we did the same. A lot of the South African public actually came on the field as well to share that moment with us, which was really, really cool. And yeah, it was just really surreal, I suppose. It's something that you don't really think can happen or dream of happening sometimes. And when it did, we were all a little bit shell-shocked in a way, like, what do we do kind of thing. So yeah, we definitely sat back. We spoke long and hard into the night just about the game, where the journey, you know, what it means to us and to the country. And then obviously we hit the town out after that, and that got a little bit fun too.
Oh, I'm sure. Lots and lots of fun.
Yeah, those were your stories come from. Sorry, those were your stories come from. It's, yeah, when you hit the town, got a really good one from after the World Cup in Barbados, which was quite cool.
Okay. Yeah. What happened there?
Yeah. Really good stories about Barbados. Well, yeah, it was unfortunate we lost the final, but
yeah, that was devastating. I was there. Gosh. Like, yeah. I still remember that like all of you boys just being so flat. So like you'd had an incredible, incredible time. Like you played out of your skin. Obviously you weren't necessarily, you played a couple of games, right? During that World Cup?
No, I didn't even get on the field. I was a good watcher.
Yeah, right. I thought maybe you played like maybe one or two, but still, you were there. You were carrying the drinks around. I remember I was giving you a wave every time you passed me, getting me stepped in. But honestly, South Africa had played an incredible, incredible series. It was amazing to witness. So to see India, and oh God, they were that pumped about it. Honestly, I will never, ever forget it. And what a cool place. I mean, the West Indies is amazing. The vibes are always high. I just incredible. Love it there.
Yeah, Barbados was really special. It was an interesting World Cup. Yeah, I learned a lot. You know, the game teaches you a lot, I suppose. But I think the devastating thing is, like you said, we were all flat. We basically had the game in our hands, and we gave it back to them. So it was a disappointing night. But yeah, at least the night was saved for some. And we managed to make the most out of it.
Yeah, you certainly did. I think from that moment on, though, your career just went absolutely gangbusters. You've just been everywhere. You've been so busy doing so much. I mean, playing for your country, you've been popping up in so many different leagues and mean to play in the IPL as well. But from that moment, I felt like watching you, you've just grown into this absolute superstar.
Yeah, I think it must have been that extra bit of luck, I suppose, after the World Cup final that really got us there. But yeah, we've definitely climbed some ladders. It's been a cool journey. It's been slow at times, but it's moved quite nicely from a cricketing point of view. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's nice when, you know, you put in the effort and things seem to, you know, there's a result for it, I think. And like I said, to sit at that World Cup and not play, to learn a lot and to be around the team and, you know, to experience the heartbreak, I suppose, of that night, to then, you know, get the opportunity to play in this year's World Cup, to get into the IPL, to play for a lot more for South Africa, it's something that, you know, you look back and you can almost be grateful for those steps that were in play. And yeah, just really chuffed with the way things are going right now.
You should be. Tell me, what's your proudest moment that you've had so far?
I suppose, yeah, winning that WTC, but from an individual point of view, I think it was really, really cool to get a double 100 on a New Year's Day test. Was really special for me. Again, something never in my wildest dreams. And I wasn't even meant to open the batting that game. I got thrusted in the day before, and, you know, in a way, like I said earlier, kind of dim expectations for me and kept me quite calm and just let me react. But to do it at a packed Newlands on a, you know, scorching summer's day, in a place that's always hungry for test cricket, and put on a performance like that from an individual point of view was, yeah, something I'll definitely take with me to the grave.
Did you have mum and dad in the crowd too?
I had my mom and my aunt. Yeah, my dad was in London at the time. But yeah, I flew my mom and my aunt in. It was really cool to have some family there. They don't get to experience a lot of my games as they live in the UK and my brother lives in the UK. So, you know, the opportunity to have them there was really cool. I think my mom got more TV time than me at a stage. Yeah, she was crying, and so is my aunt as well. They were sobbing, so it was a bit ridiculous. I had to tell her off at the end of the day. But
oh, that's so special though.
Yeah, it was quite cool. It was really cool for them, you know, to my mom and her sister to be there, and they had a great week. Yeah, a great week in Cape Town. They obviously got to see me do my thing, and yeah, it was really special to have them there.
Did you get emotional under your helmet? Or were you just more excited?
No, I'm pretty blank. Come on, you know that. not too much guess to me. I think I'm really good at internalizing a lot of things. I think in cricket you get a lot more sense of relief more than anything. I was relieved as hell to cross that stage or to cross that milestone. I was relieved that my mom and my aunt were there. They came all the way down there to watch me, and that I managed to do something useful as well. So it's a lot more just you can exhale and just, you know, be comfortable and be happy with what you've done, and that all of the effort and the work actually, you know, came into something.
Absolutely. Tell me, just this is the last of my cricket questions, and then we can have a little bit of fun. I've got a random game up next, but SA20 has really taken off. It's such an exciting new tournament that's really popped up over the last couple of years. Gets access to some of the best players in the world. It's really up against Big Bash as well because it's on at the same time. But tell me, what is it that you love about playing in SA20? I want to come. It looks like such a great vibe.
It is. You'd love it. I think I remember chatting to you. You said that you were trying to wangle your way in there. I think they'd be lucky to have you. Yeah, it's amazing. I think we have such good supporters and a fan base here that, you know, cricket domestically was taking a bit of a slump, and just, you know, really revitalized the whole thing. The quality of players we have domestically and internationally, I think is really amazing. The standard is through the roof. And, you know, with the inclusion of the IPL teams, they really do know how to, you know, put on a show and brand correctly and make sure that people are aware of what's happening. And I just think the product is really good. We have all the Proteus players playing. I think that's the big first step, is that you have to have your internationals playing in your lead tournament. And we get some of the best international players in the world. So the crowd really get up for it. The games are quick. They're back to back. The support is massive throughout. We've come last three times out of four and won it once, but the Newlands faithful is really unwavering. But I think that's the best thing about the tournament, is that the country, it's at the right month. A lot of the country's on holiday at that time as well. So most of the games are, if not all of them, are sold out. And lifestyle off the field is really great. The players really enjoy it. The access to top quality coaching and players and facilities is there. And just the show, you know, it really gives you energy. And you're encouraged to put on a show for the crowd. You're encouraged to really just express yourself. And It's an extremely rewarding tournament, and it's been great for myself. It's been great for cricket in the country. It's really boosted South African players. And looking at the IPL this year, I think we have the most overseas players in the tournament. So it's a testament to how strong that tournament is and how important it is in our calendar.
We're about to take one more quick break, but when we're back, we've got something a little fun on the other side. All right, you ready?
No, but test me, let's go.
I don't think you are. Now, this is
You should have sent me the questions before, so at least I get an understanding of where I'm going here.
This is good fun. Okay, right. I didn't make these, by the way, FYI. Anyways, so this is called Blind Ranking Challenge. So pretty much I'm going to get you to blind rank some zoo animals. So I'm going to give you 10 different zoo animals. And you've got to rank each from 1 to 10 as I say them. But you don't know what's coming next, so you can't change your answers.
All right,
you got it?
Let's go.
I'm going to say an animal. Yeah. Out of 10, you got to give it whatever number it is. But you can't change your answers.
Okay. Let's go.
All right, we're on. So, first one, the lion.
Shouldn't be in a zoo, but being from South Africa, I'm going to go 2.
2? Wait, did we say which one was the best and the worst? Is the best the king of the
1.
The king of the zoo is 1. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right. King of the zoo. I don't know if that makes sense.
King of the zoo.
Anyways, the penguin.
Oh, cheeky little guys. Also, none of these, not a fan of zoos, but I'm going to, they're quite cool little guys. I'm going to lob them in at 5.
Okay.
Mm.
All right. Penguin. I'm writing these down just so we can, you know, pick it up later. Giraffe.
Okay. 7.
7. Okay.
Yeah, giraffe. I'm sliding him down a bit. I know that there's a curveball coming. It's generally quite late, so hang on for it.
What about the panda?
Those clumsy little things. Those are an elite zoo animal. I'm gonna go 4 for those ones.
Whoa! Higher.
Yeah, those things are cool. Probably because I haven't seen one of them before, but those things are elite. I love them.
Okay. I feel like they'd be cool to just, like, roll. Like, you push them and they're, like,
roll. I just like watching them and all those videos I see of them online, they're just falling over.
Oh, my God,
so.
They're so cute. They're so cute. No. Especially the babies. Yeah, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah, they're quite stupid little things, but I do like them.
Okay, what about a polar bear?
Oh, my gosh. This is getting hard now.
Yep.
6. I still feel like there's going to be some really average animals coming up, so they're going to be safe for 8, 9, 10. So I'm going to love them in at 6.
Okay. An elephant.
It could be 1, but it could be too common. So I'm gonna push them down to. I'm actually going to push those down to 10.
No. Oh my God, elephants are so cute. 10. I don't like
10
that.
Ten because they're everywhere in zoos, and they're probably the biggest animal that shouldn't be in a zoo, in my opinion. So I'm going to lob them down at 10.
I think we should change this to zoo. I think you got something against the zoo, so let's just say animals.
Massively. Okay. Oh, okay. We're just going animals. If we're going animals, then I've definitely put penguins too high. Okay. Then I'll...
Get zoo out of your brain, all right? This animals are safe. They're safe. I've got them. I'm looking after them. They're like really happy. Maybe it's like a little animal hospital where we're just, you know, we're going to.
Tell me what's available. 8. What's available?
Okay.
8, 9,
you have
10.
Have 1 available.
And 1.
You have 8 and you have 9 available.
Oh,
and
gosh.
3.
Sorry, okay. Elephant. And 3. Okay. And then I'll chuck them in at 3. Elephants at 3.
You can't change.
Okay. We can't change. I'll sit with them at 10.
You, messed up. You've got.
Yeah, but you didn't explain the parameters of it that they're safe. I'm just thinking like these are poor little guys stuck in an enclosure.
Oh my gosh. Surely you know me by now that I wouldn't endanger animals. I love animals. Please. Oh, okay. We've got a couple more. Okay, hippo. See, that should have been 10.
Sure. No, hippos are way cool. They're very cool. They'll be 8.
They're scary as. Are you serious?
Yeah, they're cool. I like them.
They're really fast.
Yeah, they're bloody dangerous as well. They're elite animals. Yeah. We're a big fan of them.
They were fast. Like, in my head that they're slow and they're fast. And the way that they swim.
Yeah, with the little legs.
The little legs. How do they move so quick? Anyway.
No, they're elite. We do like those. Those can go at 8, so I've got 9, 3, and 1.
Okay. Flamingo.
9.
Ooh.
Easy peasy. Should have been 10.
Zebra.
Oh, definitely not 1, so it has to go 3. I've really botched this list.
You really have.
Yeah.
Okay. So last one, tiger.
Oh, that's not a bad number 1.
Not bad. Okay, so you have number 1 is tiger, number 2 lion, 3 a zebra, 4 panda, 5 penguin, 6 polar bear, 7 giraffe, 8 hippo, 9 flamingo, and then 10 elephant.
It's not that bad, but 3 and 5 needed to swap with 10 and I think 8. Not that bad.
I mean, decent elephant. I'm not a fan of. That's not your best.
Sorry, I've left that down there. That's just coming from where I come from. You know, they're a bit more frequent in my life.
Okay, fair. All right. Just casual. Frequent in your life. You have an elephant. Okay.
Yeah. One outside right now.
No, you don't. Okay. Final bit of questions. These are just some rapid fire. It's called the final whistle. I'm going to throw them at you and just answer them best you can. All good with that?
All right. Let's do it.
All right. What's something that's that you've changed your mind about in sport recently?
That you don't have to work harder, you can work smarter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was very recent. Extremely recent, more in India, actually, yeah.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about this new finding.
I think, like I said, in India, you can just get bombarded by all cricket, and sometimes the only escape is getting out the room is to train. So that can actually be a bit detrimental as overdoing it for the sake of it. So, you know, being comfortable just to say that I've done what I needed to do, be smart in how you do it and not, you know, drag it out if you need to. So probably put on the bench of working harder. If you can just work smarter, it saves a lot of time and a lot of mental capacity as well. And, you know, gets you where you need to go quicker.
I like it. What's the best piece of advice you've gotten from a coach?
Guys, know your strengths and know your weaknesses. I heard that from Jacques Callas. As he said it to me, I said, oh, like, know your strengths and know your weaknesses and, like, get better at your weaknesses. He said, no, you don't need to get better at your weaknesses. You just need to know what they are. If you know what they are, you stick on your strengths, be aware of what your weaknesses are and what can bring you down, but always emphasize working on your strengths. Doesn't mean you don't work on your weaknesses, but make sure your strengths are really good.
Great advice. All right. Which teammate or former teammate would you want on your trivia team?
Trent Bolt. He's incredibly sharp. It doesn't sometimes come across, but he is quite sharp and extremely witty and knows what he's talking about. And even if he doesn't, he's really good at spinning a story and making you believe that he knows what he's talking about. So I'd have Balti on that side.
Story times will win people over with the trivia.
Story times, like he asked earlier, he'd also give you a good few stories.
Great. A cricketing superpower you wish you had?
Um, probably the ability to read the bowler's mind, or, you know, what they're thinking. And if I could know what they're thinking, then that would make me, it would make my life a lot easier, make me a lot better of a player. And I think that's probably where, what separates the good players from the great players. They kind of always know what's coming down before it's even left the hand. So yeah, if I could get that kind of knowledge, then I reckon
that'd be an elite skill.
That would be an elite skill just for life, I think.
Wouldn't it? Yeah. Read everyone's mind.
I'd love to know what you're thinking.
Yep. I'd love to know what lots of people are thinking. Okay. What's one cricket moment you wish you could relive?
Probably that. Probably that double hundred in Pakistan that New Year's Day test, probably that double hundred, that moment of getting it with my parents there, my friends there, is something I think I'd always want to relive here.
Yeah, good one. Dream teammate from any era. Who are you picking and what?
Dream teammate from any era. I'd probably go with Shane Warne because of not necessarily because of his cricketing abilities, but I think of his lifestyle and off-field things that he brings to the table. I've obviously never met Warney, but heard a lot of things about him, and quite an eccentric character, obviously on the field. But I don't think he left a stone unturned off the field, and I think that could be quite exciting.
Absolutely. Knows how to have fun. Did?
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
What's Up by Four Non Blondes, I think it is.
Okay. Do you want to sing it for us?
I don't have any music playing. Can you hum the beat and I'll sing it for you? 25 years, yeah. Hey, gosh, no, I can't believe I've gone for that song. You're gonna make me try sing it. No, it's a really high one. You know which song I'm talking about.
Come on, you started. Just give it a get
into it. What's going on that song? No, I forgot the words. Sing it back to me.
No.
you know which song I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. Of course I know. I'm not singing. Yeah, I'm going. Yeah. No way.
It's your show. I think it's your show. I think your watchers would love to have you sing on camera.
Yeah, well, that will not happen because they will never listen to you again. Give us your most used emoji.
That rolling the eyes one is prominent in my that lives.
Who gets that? Who gets the rolling of the eyes? I'd be offended.
What, when you told me that we were doing this interview on Thursday, I had to send it to you as well. So even you get it.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's definitely the one, it's definitely the most used. People ask me for things. That's my go-to.
Yeah, right. Big roll of the eyes guy. Mine's the one. You know the little hair part? They're like holding it together. Yeah. This one? That's mine.
Is that your one?
That's my go-to.
You're too nice. You just try the rolling of the eyes though. Goes a bit further.
No. Right, okay. Well, last one. Give us a hidden talent that no one knows about.
I got two. I'm a really good squash player, but on a complete separate note, I can play the harmonica, believe it or not.
No, you can't. Have you got a harmonica? Oh, my God. Harmonica? Have you got one?
I do not have one with me. I moved houses recently, so I haven't seen it since it. But that would also be a bit of a stretch to ask me to play that for you.
That would have been cool. You didn't sing, yeah. So surely you played that. Let down.
You didn't sing either, Gracie, so surely you can rock up with something else too.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop pestering you. Thank you so much for your time, Ryan. Really appreciate you jumping on here. It's been great to get to know you a little bit better. And yeah, I hope I see you around soon. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Grace. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I hope to see you at the SA20 soon.
Hopefully.
enjoy Belgium, and I'm sure you'll make the most of it.
I will. I'm so excited. Europe is calling my name. Well, that's all for this episode of Game On with Grace. If you loved this conversation, make sure you hit the follow button or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share the episode with your friends. We've got so many more legendary guests, hilarious debates, and big stories coming your way. I'm Grace Hayden. Until next time, keep competitive.